I'm Don Hodson, and I'm doing an oral history interview for the project The Spirit of Survival, Voices from the Depression. The date is August 22nd, 1985, and I'm visiting with, this afternoon, Alice Cecil, who lives out by Huntley and is also part of the Table Mountain community. And Alice, what year were you born?
1915.
And what about?
In North Platte, Nebraska.
How many were in your family?
There were six of us, three boys and two girls. Three girls, I was the third girl.
Did your father farm?
Yes.
And how long were your parents or you in North Platte?
We moved to Wyoming in 1919 and started farming right away. And I rented a farm at that time to start farming.
Whereabouts were you farming?
It would be about 17 miles straight south of Huntley in the almost LaGrange area. We were on this side of 66, that 66 ridge of hills over there. We were on the south side of that.
What caused you, if I can ask, what caused your dad to pick up the family and leave Nebraska and come to Wyoming?
Well, he worked in North Platte at the railroad, for the railroads, until his aunt died, and they had asked him to come up to Overton, Nebraska to help take care of the, and help him farm. But the alkali water down there bothered my dad's stomach so bad that the doctor told him he had to go get out of that area and come up west somewhere. And so this is why he decided to come to Wyoming.
Well, was that all dry land farming at that time?
Yes, that was all dry land farming at that time.
You weren't part of the Hot Springs Project, were you?
No, we're too far east for that to be. The Hot Springs Project runs mostly west of Hot Springs and some east, but real close to, you know, in that area there where there's none of it runs anywhere near as far as we were there.
Where did you start school?
In a little country school named Mountain View.
Was that near your...
It was a mile from our place. It was a mile from where we lived, and we walked to school. It was a mile. It was always fun. It was a mile north, south going to school, but it was always a mile north coming home in the wind and cold.
Well, how long did you go to that country school?
Through the eighth grade. I went from first to eighth grade. They didn't have kindergarten at that time.
Was that, I guess, the typically one-room school?
From grades one through eight in it.
About how many students?
We had as high, well, I think around 20, 18 to 20, but the highest one year we had 27 kids in that school, you know, going to school there. And of course, they combined grades in, first and second were together, and third and fourth, and on up like that. And seventh and eighth were always together.
That must have been a different experience in those years when you look back on going to school in that. I don't know how many people anymore can say they went to a one-room country school.
But, you know, of course, we didn't know any better, but it was fun, and we always had such a good time. We put on plays and all kinds of things like that, for Thanksgiving and Christmas and all of those kind of things we had.
Did you go to school in the winter, Alice?
Oh, yeah. We went from September till May every year.
So it was... School was out in the summer months.
Yeah, school was out around the last of May.
And one teacher for
one all teacher eight grades. For all 8 grades. And I sometimes now when I think about teachers complaining, or you know, what would they do now if they had 8 grades to teach?
When you finished the 8th grade, did you go on to high school?
I started, but this was starting the 30s, and I went for 6 months. I rode a horse back to a bus. There was no buses in our area. And I rode a horse back to this place and tied my horse up and got on the bus and went to school. Well, then when it got too cold by Christmas, I couldn't go anymore. So I had to drop it, and I kept thinking I'd get back. But there just never was the opportunity to go.
What school was that?
Hawk Springs. And later... By the time I decided not to go to school anymore, they did bring a bus in, so my younger two brothers and my sister got to go to Hot Springs on the bus to school.
Well, that was kind of hard. Was that kind of a hard decision to make, not to go back? It was just so difficult to go to school.
And, well, I guess I was real lenient. Now, my sister demanded that she get to go to school, and she did. My older sister, one just younger than I am. And so we had to work away. We got her into Torrington and placed her in the orphanage.
This was a younger sister?
Just younger than I am. When she got through the eighth grade one, she demanded to go, and there was no way. The folks couldn't afford board and room or tuition, either one. And at that time, you had to pay tuition, and there was no place in Hawk Springs that nobody had any place they could even board and room kids going to school. So she just kept harping it. So my folks went up and seen. This was long when they very first started the orphanage, and there was a priest in head of it. His name was Father Henry, and he was from Ireland, and so were my parents. And they went up and visited, and he says, bring her up, and we'll put her in the orphanage, and I'll place her somewhere in Torrington to work for her board and room. And they did. And then she spent this 4 years in Torrington.
What were you doing this time?
Oh, I was working for her first here and there and all over the country, you know, wherever I could get a job. I worked for Dr. Keenan for, well, two different times, about a year at a time each time. And then once my mother got sick, and I went home to help her, and then I worked different places, just, you know, maybe for a month or two during harvest or haying or something like this down in Nebraska. And then I went back and worked at Lyle Pools. Lyle's been gone a long time now. I mean, he used to run the plumbing deal, and I worked there for a while. And then I worked out to Huntley at Pat Raven's. I don't know if you know those people or not.
I Lindell,
Pat and Lindell Raven. I worked there up till I got married then.
Did they run a lumber yard?
Well, his brother Ray. They run a grocery store in Huntley. And she worked in the store, and then that's why I stayed. I took care of their children. They had three.
Wow, she probably were only about, 14 or 15 when you came into Torrington to work for Dr. Keenan?
No, I was a little older. See, I was 15 when I started high school, going on 15. Well, then I stayed home a year, and I don't know, I was about 16 or 17 the first time I came in to work. And then, you know, then I'd go home and help the folks, and then I would go work for a month or two somewhere, wherever there was something to do, and then come.
Now, this would have been about what?
33 was when one of the years I worked for Dr. Keenan. It was in 1933.
Were there quite a number of so-called hired girls like yourself working for different businesses?
Yes, for people, you know, that had, they didn't have a lot, but they had you know, they could afford to have somebody, and more or less, I think it was a helping out plan that they had. They could help this family out by helping. One of the girls could come in and help them with the housework, and they could take a little of the burden off of the parent, you know, where they had several children, and help them. And it gave them some freedom, because most of them always had one or two children, and you took care of the children and helped with them, and that way they had a little more free time.
You didn't help down in Dr.
No, I worked at the house and took care of the I worked there the first time, and they had just this one little boy. And then mother got sick, and I went home. And then they were going to have another child, and they called, wanted to know if I'd come back. And so I went back, and then I worked for almost a year again there when the second one was born for Dr. Keenan's. And when I worked for Pools, they didn't have any children of their own, but she had taken three of her sister's children in to raise. And so then I helped her with these three.
How much did you get paid, Alan?
You'd be surprised. 3.5 a week. But, you know, that was free money to me. I mean, my board and room was taken care of. And this was money, and I was not doing very much. You know, I didn't go any place or anything like that. I didn't have any way. So my 3.5 counted up as time went on. And my sister and I used to go Saturday afternoons to the show. It only cost us, I think, 15 cents apiece to go to the show on Saturday afternoon. Can you imagine going to the show now for 15 cents?
Well, as you worked then in that home as kind of a domestic, I don't want to use the word servant, but domestic help. Evidently, people then, such as Dr. Keenan, the pools, others, evidently other people then had some money during those years.
Well, they were making a little. Now, I don't think that Dr. Keenan's were making a whole lot, because I know that we sure got lots of bread and milk and butter on hand to pay for calls that were made or sicknesses that had been in families, because I know that she never wanted for cream. There's always somebody bringing her a pint or a quart of cream practically every week, and it was went on the bill.
Did people then, such as these who hired out young girls like yourself, did they see that as a kind of a way in which they could help?
I think they did.
Did they feel that they really needed the help?
Well, I think both ways. I think they needed it both ways, but I think they felt that they were helping and that they were getting somebody to help them to lift the burden off of them where they didn't have, they had a little more free time. They could do some of the things they wanted to do without having to be tied down completely all the time.
Well, did you then become acquainted with other hired girls?
Oh, yeah, a few. I didn't. Well, I was awful shy then. I didn't go around trying to, but I did get acquainted with a few. It was, especially if they came out from in our neighborhood, so, you know, that I happened to know about some of them. I got acquainted with a few, but not really a whole lot. Those three of those years that I worked there, my sister was going to school there, so then I had her to visit with, you know, too. And because she was working at another place, and we would spend some time together each week.
It must have been somewhat lonely years.
Yeah,
and
well, the folks came in about once every two or three weeks to get groceries, and they always stopped, you know, and we visited them. I wrote a lot of letters, I can remember that. The postage was only 2 cents, so you could write a lot of letters. You know, I mean, it wasn't too hard to write letters. I kind of enjoyed it. But I didn't mind it all winter. But when spring came, I would be so homesick. I just couldn't hardly handle it after, you know, when it would get spring, because I wanted to go home so you could be outside, you know, and do things.
Were you in any way, Alice, aware that you were in this great national depression?
No, I don't really think that as kids we weren't. I don't know, my parents I'm sure were, but, you know, and when we were home, we never did think about being poor or hard up or any of these things. We always had such a good time in our neighborhood. All the kids in the neighborhood, we always had parties every 2 weeks where we'd go. In the summertime, we had the party outside, you know, in the wintertime, we'd pick somebody that had a little bit bigger house so we could have them in the house. We just really had good, really good times in those times.
Was there any time, though, during the 30s that you became more conscious?
Yeah,
you were in depression.
I think I noticed was not being able to go to school. This was my biggest thought about depression, and it was hard to find any work. And then I knew a lot of kids that couldn't find, such as boys that grew up at the same time I did, and they were having such a hard time. And then in 36, it was still rough. They were still having a hard time, and so many of the kids that I knew joined the service. That was one way of finding something to do that they wouldn't be a burden on it. And they weren't getting much pay at that time. I think it was only $21 a month when they went into service, but at least they had board and room and some money. And my brother, in the 30s, my older brother, I'm the oldest, and I have a sister, and then my brother. And, of course, he didn't get to go to school, but then he joined the CCC camp. Then can't remember what the corps, you know, for the help. And he joined that 2 different 6 months. I mean, he put in 6 months and then he was out a couple of months and joined up again. And he worked up here at Guernsey. He helped put the rocks down that dam, And he also worked 1 6 months up to Saratoga, where they cut trails and put in snow fences and stuff like that.
Well, for the young men, then one way in which they could deal with the depression was to go off the service, join the Native Conservation Corps, or maybe find work with the WPA.
Yeah, well, there was we didn't have too much WPA work in our area. You had to go a little ways to, you know, get some there, so there this wasn't. But after my brother got out of the last time he went to the CCCMP, then got a job on, things were picking up just a little bit, and he got a job up on a ranch up by Meriden, and where they done, I had a lot of cattle and done a lot of haying, you know, wild hay. So he was pretty well situated after that, and of course the experience he'd had of being gone 2 6 months was made him able to handle being away from home and that kind of stuff.
But for girls, you didn't hear about that.
There just wasn't much for them to do.
Was this in a way harder on young girls? Looking for jobs? Were you forced to stay home more?
Yeah, you were forced to stay home. If you didn't find something to do, then you just stayed home. And this is when it was boring, when you had to stay home all the time. Because there wasn't, you could work at home. This is no fun about that. But, I mean, it wasn't what girls wanted to do. They wanted to do something that was, get them somewhere, bring something in, you know, to be a little more self-sufficient for themselves. And it's pretty hard on girls to. But by the end of towards the end of the 30s, say 38, 37, 38, along in there, then of course they all got to go to high school, and this was a big boom. And at that time you could go to high school and then go 1 year postgraduate course and teach school, if you could find a country school to teach. And I know a lot of girls that did this. They, just 1 year of postgraduate, I don't know what they called it, normal training is what they called it. And I knew several girls that got to do this and taught these country schools. And I think now, my goodness, they expect all these girls to have a degree or many than one before they can even begin to teach.
Well, Alice, you worked then in the 1930s. You worked as domestic help. You were back home helping your folks on the farm. Did you have some other jobs?
Well, not much. That's for the two biggest things that I did. I can't remember doing anything too much else except those two. I would go home, and of course then when I went home to help folks with, I'd done anything that was supposed to be work in the field or whatever. And of course I never did mind that. I always liked field work.
What did you do for entertainment and fun?
Well, our parties was the big thing that we had, and we in the summertime, we always picked a night the moon was going to be full, and so we could play outdoors with moonlight, and we played all kinds of games that were, and I think, I don't know why I didn't write them down, because I've forgotten most of them now. They were like Skip to Maloo and all those kind of games, you know, that you played in circles and things like that.
You went to the picture show occasionally, Saturday afternoon?
No, well, when I was in town, I did, but when I was home, we didn't go to the picture shows. Because my dad did get a car in 1930, but it only went for business. That was all. It was driven. You didn't take it and go to the show or anything like this. We, in the summer, around the 4th of July, we always went to LaGrange, the rodeo. LaGrange always, in those years, had a rodeo. And we all went to that. That was some one thing we all took in, was that rodeo. Wasn't very expensive. I don't even know if there was a gate fee then to get in to watch the rodeo.
Did you listen to radio?
Yeah, we liked radio. We had radio, and we had, of course, we had to be careful. You were on batteries, and so you didn't, just favorite programs you got to see. And
what
listen
were some
to
of my favorite programs?
Oh, Law Perkins, and there was another one that, and of course the news, we always had to listen to the news and the market reports. And then they had a farm and home hour at that time, they came on at noon every day, from noon, 12 to 1, and if we were home, really, because Dad and Mother always listened to that, home hour, because it covered all of what was going on in the country, you know, and you knew what the business, because our mail was only an every other day mail route, so you only got mail every other day. So this was a real interesting program for us to know what was going on. And this was back when Roosevelt had been president a couple of years when this program came on. And I really don't remember how many years it ran, but I know it ran for several years, this Farm and Home Hour. And it brought you up to date on all the things that was going on about farms and programs and such as that that was coming up.
Were there any other things?
Well, the thing I remember most is the wind and the dirt. That was the most terrible thing we had to put up with. You know, it just blew and it blew and it blew. Do you remember this spring, that one day when the wind blew so hard in the last part of May?
I certainly do.
Okay, we had day after day after day just like that. Just day after day of it. The wind would calm down in the night about midnight until about 4 o'clock, and then by daylight here it came again, just full force. You couldn't see. The dirt would be so thick in the air. We had a terrible time doing washing because in those days there was no automatics. You had to hang it on the line. If you had a calm morning and got it out, if the wind came up and you didn't hurry and get it in, it was covered with dirt that had to be done again. I mean, it was just dirt all over.
So you put your washing out early?
Oh, very early, because a lot of times we'd have the water and everything ready for washing for 3 days, hoping for a calm morning that we could get some out and get it washed. This was one of the hardest things we had to do. But man, when it was really, really, really bad, you'd hang wet towels at the windows to absorb some of the dust so you didn't get quite so much in the house. We always put when you set the table with the plates upside down so they weren't full of dirt by the time you sat down to eat. That was the worst, I think, of all of the 30s, was that wind and dirt.
There must have been other things that people did then to cope with that. As you mentioned, you turned the plates upside down, you hung white sheets. Were there other things that people did to cope with that?
Well, everything was covered. You learned to cook. You never got anything cooked ahead of time. You just, whenever they came in, you hurried up and got something ready to eat, because you couldn't leave any kettles on the stove with something cooking in them very long, and with the lid off or anything like that, because they'd be, and they're always, when we always baked bread, you didn't go to town that often to buy bread, so you baked your own. And I know that she always wrapped hers in, put them in a flour sack. Of course, that time you bought flour, they came in sacks. They didn't come in paper bags. They came, and of course, you have the bread cooled while you put each loaf in a flour sack, you know, and wrapped it good so that it wouldn't get any dust to it by the time you went and wanted to eat it. And with things kept in the oven, you know, after the fire went down, then all the pans and everything went in the oven so they wouldn't be dirty for the next day.
That must have had an effect upon women on the farms.
Yeah, it was really a real hardship for a lot of, and I mean, as a young girl, you'd get disgusted, but then you could go play or go do something else. But I think of the mothers, they'd clean house, and 2 hours later they'd come in and the dirt would be this high on the windowsill running off on the floor. And you know, that's pretty negative, what's the use type feeling. But they went ahead and cleaned it again. I just went on and on. Of course, my mother didn't stay in the house too much. She, to make a living, she decided to raise turkeys, and this is something we raised every year there, all those years that I can remember. Some she hatched out, some turkeys she hatched out, some she bought the little already hatched in. And then we raised them, and then we herded turkeys. Of course, the grasshoppers were. You've seen some grasshoppers this year. You've been out. And that's only a taste of what we had at that time. Oh, they were terrible. So we'd herd turkeys around our fields to keep the grasshoppers down. And so we raised turkeys, and in the wintertime we would dress them and ship them to Chicago or someplace like this. In the wintertime you had to dress them when it was a real cold day and pick the feathers off of them. And you didn't scald them or anything. They had a method of killing them and dressing them, and you packed them in barrels with that dry ice, and they were shipped. I think most of them went to Chicago. I think it was a Fox company or something like that bought those turkeys, and we also raised chickens, what they call capons, the bigger chickens. But that was our winter job. We were pretty busy in the winter. Every time the temperature got below zero, we were dressing turkeys or chickens. But it was a community affair. We'd go up and help so-and-so there, and we'd all go up there and help them, and then they'd come down and help us, and we just done it together.
Women had to put up with this constant day after day of wind and dust and dirt. What about the men? Did it have an effect on them?
I think it did, because see, they'd plant a crop, and well, of course we raised wheat and corn and oats. Those mostly the grains that were grown out there. But you plant the wheat in the fall, of course, and then they'd watch it blow out before spring. You know, and this was one of the hardships that they had to put up with, and trying to raise enough feed for the cows, the cattle they had. And when it would, they'd cut rushen thistles, they'd cut anything and stack it green, and they'd eat it in the wintertime if it was stacked green, you know, where they'd cured out and so it wasn't stickery, or they'd. But no, there was a lot of them were despondent. Some of them, I don't know, could handle it pretty good. Others just, well, I think they all, farmers all live on that. Maybe next year will be better. I mean, that's always been a deal for farmers. It's always next year may be better.
Were some of those farmers forced to leave the land?
There was some, but right in our neighborhood there wasn't very many that, we did buy a place and we lost it through the Depression. The folks had bought a place and they were paying for it well. There was no way they could keep up with it, and they did lose it, but in the same instance, they got to keep on renting it. You know, they lost what they'd put into it, but they didn't have to move off. The people they bought it from said, well, we don't have anybody to farm it, go ahead and farm it. So we got to stay there, and then my folks left the farm in 1942. In 1942, my two younger brothers joined the service, and the rest of us were all married, so that left them. Well, my youngest sister wasn't married yet. She was still in school. But Dad says, this is it. If I don't have anybody here, I'm leaving. And so they moved to Torrington in 42. And they moved several different houses. I don't remember just exactly now where they all were. But they finally bought a house over on OSB. It was just a little house on the alley. The front was all open. There was nothing, no buildings on the front. And for years, my dad had the most beautiful garden. He just loved that. I mean, there he was. He could just have the most beautiful garden. Everybody used to have a piece in the paper about it. My dad's garden was the most beautiful garden in Torrington because it had all kinds of flowers and stuff. And he really enjoyed those years that he got to work with the garden.
Do you think those hard times of the 30s, did they eat into family happiness?
It might have been, but it didn't in ours. I don't know why. We always seemed to be, I don't know what the folks did, but we were unconcerned about it. It never worried us about the hard times. We all had horses to ride. And if we didn't have a car to go in, while we went horseback to where, you know, what we were going to do for a day or half a day or something like that when we had time.
Did your father have a large garden on the farm?
No, which just water was a problem there, because, see, when the place we moved to that he bought, while we didn't have a windmill on there to pump the water, was all hand pumping. So you don't, we had a little garden, a very little garden because of pumping water, and you had to pump water for cattle, so that was a big problem.
A number of farmers said, well, they, especially the farm wives, and they just canned hundreds of vegetables and fruit
yeah.
and meat.
Now, but see, we Dad always planted beans in the field. Now, these were a little different than the, and they were a red bean, kind of like a kidney bean, only they were a little bit bigger than the kidney bean you buy in town right now in a can. And he'd plant five or six rows, and somehow or other it always produced some beans, and we thrashed these out, and this, at least we always had corn. Now we canned, while they had beans on, string beans on them, we canned string beans out of them, and then whatever got ripe we had for dry beans. And we raised some carrots and a few things like that, not a big garden, but you know, a small one that we could water down by the well, you know, where we could not have to carry water to it. And but fruit was cheap in those days. For you could buy peaches and stuff like that for 50 cents a bushel. And we canned just canned. We didn't have any refrigeration to take care of anything fresh. So and in the wintertime we always canned meat, you know.
You'd butcher
a beef or a pork, and then you would can it. The beef we always, and they didn't have too many pressure cookers at that time either, but we'd done it in I don't know, do you know what a wash boiler looks like?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You'd put this on the stove, on a wood stove, and put slats in the bottom, and I think it would hold somewhere around 13 quarts. And then you'd cook that, and it seems to me like it must have been 2 hours or so that you processed that meat so that it would keep.
Now, did you cook meat inside the jars?
Well, at first, Mother always took it, and we cut it up, you know, where we went, small pieces, and you pan fried it, you know, sautéed it on both sides, and then packed them in the jars, and then cooked the rest of it in this water bath, where the jars were covered with water, and you kept it boiling for 2.5 hours. Now, pork we done a little different. You cook the meat to a certain point, about 2/3 done, and then you rendered the lard, and then you took crocks, and you layered the meat and layered the lard over the top, you know, poured lard over top of it, and that sealed it. And you could put it, we had a cellar that you could put it in to keep. They did, we didn't do too much of that, curing pork and bacon in a brine, in a barrel. But it was all right for winter use, but in the summer it got too strong, you know, with no cool place to hang the meat. It became very, very strong before with the salt and the brine in the hams or bacon. But we really did like the sausage and the pork loins and stuff like that.
Made it all yourself, though?
Yeah. And we made sausage.
Did you always have enough to eat?
Never once I can ever remember being hungry. And I asked my husband, I said, and he grew, of course, he grew up in down Nebraska, down Chase County. And I, were you ever hungry? And he said, no, I was never hungry. He said, maybe we wanted something fancy and we didn't have it, but we were never hungry. And we never were hungry either. I don't ever recall being hungry. There was times that we wanted something different, but we didn't always get. Mother would get hungry for fresh fruit in the wintertime. This was the thing that she used to complain about. So if Dad went to town, he always brought some apples and bananas home, or oranges, so that we'd all have some fresh fruit for that when he went to town. But they didn't go to town very often then.
Did you have a steady diet of beans?
Well, we had we raised potatoes too. But then, see, we had corn. We canned some corn, but we dried corn. Did you ever eat dried corn? It's delicious. We cut this corn off, you know, and then you hang it in cheesecloth bags on the clothesline until it's perfectly dry, and then you can put it in a can, and it'll keep. But then you soak it overnight, and it's just like fresh corn. And we'd have corn, and we had lots of string beans. And there was another thing we raised. Mother liked beets, red beets. And we had carrots. Of course, the carrots you could always keep them for quite a while in the wintertime by putting them in a tub or bucket of sand And they'll keep for quite a long time in the winter that way, where they're pulled and covered with dirt, you know, or sand.
Also, I want to return just for a second to those windy dust sandstorms. Was there ever any one particular dust storm that really sticks out in your mind?
Well, there's several. I remember one morning getting up and it was blowing so hard the dirt was thick, and the wagon and the hay rack were going down the road. The wind was blowing it down the road. And Dad says, well, we forgot to block that, you know. And I said, but I did. And we went out there and it had pushed it off of this block that we had it on, and it was still going down the road. You know, and well, not the road, but in this area where he had the yard where he'd kept him, it was going towards the fence, and he was afraid he was going to run into the fence. But those are some of the, I think some of the worst times was those dirt storms that were so bad that part of the time you didn't know whether you could breathe or not because it was so dusty. And if you went out and had to, like, chores and things like this, this dirt just pelted you on the face and everywhere. Your face felt raw from it, and everything was full of dirt. That feeling of being dirty all the time was, I think, the worst thing that you could put up with. Plus, you knew you weren't going to raise anything, crop-wise, as long as that wind was going to blow like that. And it never rained. It makes me think of it this year. We have had a few clouds come up, no rain. And then, of course, that one day this spring when that wind blew so bad, I thought, oh my goodness, I hope we never have another day of it.
Reliving the Depression.
Oh, yeah, it really was. It sure did put me in mind of this.
Alice, did it ever get so bad that literally the day grew dark?
Yes, there was lots of days like that. We had lots of days that were so dark you could, in the middle of the day even, and of course we didn't have electricity then, even a lamp wouldn't even hardly show any light. No, it would just, like a big old dark cloud of dirt coming. Of course, we lived in a sandy area, and that was even worse where this sandy area was. Now, of course, in these same times, they were raising a little crops down under the irrigation because they were being able to get some water to it where we weren't getting any water, but, oh, it was terrible that you know, it could get so dark you could hardly see.
Was that frightening to people?
In a way, it was frightening. It was frightening in this, if we were home, it wasn't frightening. But if somebody was gone and hadn't got home yet, this was what was frightening. You know, mother would walk the floor till whoever was gone, if it was Dad or one of the kids out doing something, until they got to the house.
Were you afraid that you could lose your way in these?
This is another thing. You're afraid you could lose your way, and it's almost like a blizzard, only it's dirt instead of snow. And it was stifling the wind, you know, to breathe. Everybody wore a handkerchief over their face to try to keep from getting so much dirt in their nose, but they were real bad, those dirt storms.
What did the fields look like?
Looked like mounds like this of dirt.
Mounds, what, 3 feet?
Some of them were. Now, some of them would be like this, some of them would be out. Fence posts would be covered clear over the top of fence posts. And you couldn't find the fence. In the spring, we'd have to go out and dig out the fence and get it back up on top of the ground again. The fence kept getting higher. Higher. No, there was an awful lot of that.
What enabled your folks to stay on the farm through these tough times?
Well, just mainly, I think, this perseverance. And like Dad said, what else can I do? This is all I know. And with the chicken. And of course, my dad, after, say about the middle of the 30s, he went and worked any place he could go to work. If there was somebody who needed somebody, he'd go work. And maybe it's only a day or two or something like that, but to help out. And of course, I think that really and truly the chickens and turkeys kept us going. Because I don't remember now what they paid on them, and part of the price doesn't come any, I can't even think close to what they might have brought.
Did a lot of people raise turkeys?
Not a lot of people. No, our neighbor raised hogs. He done. This is where his was the extra income came from, hogs. But there's quite a few raised chickens. A lot of them raised chickens. Not very many raised turkeys, but there's a few.
Now, you remember the dust storms as being one of the hardest parts of the Depression years. Was there anything else, Alice, that really made those years, looking back on those years?
Why don't you stop it just a minute?
Well, most people then were just trying to stay with it and make the best of it. As the 30s wore on, you became aware that the times were getting better. How could you tell?
Well, for one thing, they started raising some crops on the dry land. It started to rain, and this was, you know, there was some rain, and the winds calmed down where there wasn't so much wind. I think maybe that was the biggest thing, was this wind dying down so that it wasn't blowing. And then there was a little more work for people to get the irrigating areas. We're doing a little bit better job in cutting in, and they were hiring people on the dry land could go get a job done in irrigation, because pretty soon their work was over for the time being, and they could go on down there and work through, oh, like bean harvest and spud harvest and potato harvest and beet harvest. And I know my brothers would always go down every fall and to somewheres down in an irrigated area and get a job, either picking up potatoes or hauling sacked potatoes to the cellars or popping beets or hauling beets.
So there was more work then?
Yeah, there was more work. It was beginning to pick up just a little bit. And it started, starting in the 40s, gradually each year it went up, the dry land started producing again. They'd be getting enough moisture to build up some, and things started coming back for them quite a bit. But the first part, I think, was irrigated areas were producing faster than the dry land because they had the water, and if the wind quit blowing, then they could raise crop. And I think when I was working at Ravens, I could see where things were picking up. When Pat would come home, he'd say, "Well, business was a little better this week, you know, or this month," and so people had a little bit more to go on. You could pretty well tell from this kind of what was going on that people were beginning to have a little bit more. Things were coming around just a little bit.
The people that were out of work, were they looked upon as being different in any way?
No. I can't remember that anybody was looked upon as, you know, anything, but because, well, most of them that were out of work were always hunting for it, and if you knew somebody that needed somebody, well, you'd send them over to that person and say, "Well, he's looking for a job. I'm sure he'd be a good guy to get, you know, to do something with." And they were pretty helpful towards each other in those days. I think everybody was trying to help look out for the other guy. If you knew of a job and you didn't want it, well, you sure let somebody else know they could go get it.
Did farmers, for example, take over food to other farmers?
If they were short on it, they sure did. I can't recall too. I mean, I remember Dad sharing his beans, you know, with other people. We'd have more beans than what we needed, so there was always two or three people that he would share beans with, and I'm sure they shared things with him too. But I can remember, because we had to help share all those beans, and we didn't have he'd done it by hand, and that was a job to get those beans out of those pods.
Alice, I had one lady tell me that even though those times were rather tough, that her mother always managed to keep a tablecloth or an oilcloth on the table just as a reminder that there were some niceties in life.
My mom
did. Did women in those years do such things such as that, as to try to remind them that maybe this won't last forever? That,
oh, I think so too. And there was a little club that, you know, where the ladies belonged to, and I used to go to it once in a while when I was home. And this was the highlight of their week or their month. Well, I don't remember how often it met, probably twice a month, maybe it's only once a month. But they always done something at it. If one of them had a quilt done, they all went to that day and they either quilted it or tied it, or they learned how to make, somebody knew how to make something out of a old piece to redo something. They helped each other learn how to do things like that. They made men's neckties, I can still remember. If you have a piece of real bright colored material, they had a pattern there. They made neckties that you couldn't tell them from ones you get in the store. Are those, what do they call them, the ones, the big ones that are wider at the bottom. They don't wear them anymore. I don't see very few of them anymore. And I don't know, it's just lots of things they learned to do. And they, when they met for this club, it wasn't just to sit and talk. They always done something and shared all their things that they used to make things nicer, make wall hangings, everything they could think of they were making for to show each other how to do it. And they could make them out of most anything. And of course, everybody bought flour, and you know, like I said, in a cloth sack. But they came in, at that time, they came in beautiful prints, those sacks were. And so, save your flour sacks and make something out of it. You know, this was one of the things they did. And they had a ball, and they were just, you know, and enjoyed themselves just like it was. There was nothing going on outside. There wasn't any wind blowing or any dirt or anything else. It was just a time to forget. Mm-hmm. It was just a time to forget.
Women must have been, though, really very conservative during those years.
They had to be.
To do it out and to conserve and things.
And make it stretch, you know, to where it was. And I often wonder how they done it now when I think about it after I've grown up. And I don't know how that they kept food on the table, clothes on those kids, and send them to school, and all those things. When I probably would have panicked if I'd had that bad. I know ours wasn't all that easy through the years, but I don't think it was ever that bad.
Well, then, in the 30s, your life was kind of back and forth. When did you marry then, Alan?
In 1939, I got married. I had met my husband about 3 years before that, and we'd went together for about 3 years. He lived in Nebraska and worked down there, and I don't know whether we'd waited that long or not if we could have got something steady, you know, to do. So we were waiting, and then we got a first job. We got a job for that winter. We got married in January, up at Lingle. We worked up to Lingle for a year. Well, not quite a year, from February till September. Then we went down to Stegall and Hall Beets that year. And the next year we started farming. Like I said, we owned the trailer house and we rented the farm, and then we traded the trailer house for a tractor.
But by 39, things were definitely better.
They were a lot better. There was still tough ways, but then you just didn't feel it. You thought that things were getting better. You didn't have much of a, you know. And from there on, and then the 50s were our hardest years as far as we were concerned getting by, because, well, prices went bad on cattle. We got hailed out, we got froze out, and all of those things for a couple of years there, and those were real rough years. And then also the first part of the 60s, especially 62. We got hailed out and froze out again. And so, but I don't know, we managed to just say, well, just do without this and that till you get there.
Have you ever seen, since those dry years in the 30s, have you ever seen years after that, though, as bad in terms of the wind and the dirt?
No, not the wind and the dirt. As dry this year for us out there has been just about as dry. I mean, those clouds.
Compare the dryness in 1985, the summer, with 1930.
Yes, 30, whatever year in 30 you want to call it. Because we have clouds come up, and thank goodness we're on in irrigation. But But they never, we never get any rain, and of course our pasture's all dried up, and you know, it has been for a couple of months. There isn't any feed left on it. But it really is. It's one of the driest years, I think, since the 30s, as far as what I can remember.
Coming through the 30s, though, and living through that period of time, even though maybe you didn't worry about it so much, although, as I suppose, as you became married, did that make you feel in any way that you could withstand almost anything?
Well, yeah, I think...
Did you feel more stronger, tougher?
I think, yeah. Yes, I think so, that it makes you feel strong. Now, you've been through this bad before. It isn't going to be that bad. You can handle it if you just take it one day at a time till you get to the end of whatever's come up. And I think it's done my husband the same way. He worries, and yet he doesn't worry. He'll think, well, tomorrow will be better, or if not, we'll wait till the next day. And I don't know, he's went like that. No use worrying and stewing over something you can't do anything about. So,
I'm wondering, you mentioned you went together 3 years before you got married. Do you think young people postpone marriage in those hard times with the idea that you better wait till something gets better?
Well, I think maybe this was true. You had to wait till you could take care of a household. I mean, there was one of your points there, because, well, at least for us, we certainly weren't going to go get married and go home. You know, you wanted something of your own, a house, you know, somewhere to set up housekeeping of your own. And I think maybe some of them did. Some of them probably didn't, but I think we did, and I know several of our friends that did too, you know, waited till we could get situated just a little bit. Although, we didn't have all that much when we started, I'm sure of that.
When you had children then, Alice, you mentioned that you have four daughters and one son. Did you from time to time impress or try to remind them that there were such things as hard times? Did you ever try to consciously say, you know, I want my children to know that there
yes,
were hard times, and I want
we,
them to know that?
We really did. We impressed on them really hard, and I think maybe that's one reason why that hasn't been so hard for them. And of course, we did not ever have flush with money or anything like this. And when we insisted they get an education. That was the, like we said, that's the only thing we'll ever give you is an education. And we want you to have one, but you're going to have to help, and it's not going to be easy, and you're not going to have everything that everybody else has. You're going to have to get an education on what we can afford.
Do you think the depression experience itself impressed upon you, and the fact that you weren't able to continue on with your education, was that something that impressed upon you more and more, that you really had to stress that to your children?
Yes, I think this is real true. Now, I've had problems with, especially Judy, she was going to quit school. She'd had it. And I said, you just can't, we'll let you. Well, and then I said, we'll finish this semester. And then, of course, by the time I got her through in one semester and another one, pretty soon she was. Now, she's really happy. Her and Connie are always coming out and saying, boy, I'm so glad that you made us go ahead and finish. And I'm glad you made us do it out, because Judy's not that bad off now, but she's had her rough years when they first started. And Connie says, I can handle it, you know. Tom wants to go on to school, and this is going to be a real hardship on those two. But she's like, man, I can handle anything. Because I don't have to have all these things. I know how that you can wait.
One other thing. Do you think that coming through the 30s, did that make you a little more leery of getting into debt?
Yes, very much so. I mean, you know, we've always been in debt to a certain extent. But no big things. You do a thought until you can get it. And the same way with this is machinery, and this is household things, and this is all of these things. Till we can see our way clear, we don't get it.
But you know, you and I were talking before the interview, Al, about, you know, times today and for farmers in 1985 and you know, the time back in the 30s. And You were talking to me about there's certain similarities and there's certain differences, and I was wondering if you'd go ahead and go back to
them. Well, I think probably the differences is that money has such a prominent place in life today that our younger people, you can't get by without money. There's no way of making a living unless you're earning some money, or there's no way of farming without some money because the expenses are too high all the time. And in those days, they could hook up the horses and plow the fields and plant the field, and well, even there, in those days, they even saved their own seed corn and planted it. See, where today you buy all your seed corn and the price is, well, the site for seed corn and all kinds of grains, you know, or seed, plus fuel has went up. See, it's way over $1 a gallon for fuel. Even diesel is up to that price. And yet they couldn't go back to horses because, well, there's no, farms aren't made to take care of horses now. You don't have any pasture, you don't have any of the right kind of feed for a horse. You can't feed him alfalfa, you have to have. It's a lot harder for the younger ones now trying to keep even, or even keep, you know. And this is what's happened to so many of our young farmers. They went into it a few years ago when things looked really rosy, and then the prices dropped out of it. But the price of machinery and repairs has not come down. The price is still where it was before. So I don't know. I'm just hoping it turns around. If they can hang in there for maybe two or three more years, maybe it will turn around, I hope. It seems like it always runs in cycles, so many years cycle. I think this is a whole lot of what these go through, these cycles, but if they can just hang in there, but it's just so they don't lose heart. This is the thing, losing heart and throwing up your hands and saying, this is it, I can't take anymore. I think the stress is harder now on them than it was then. Because everybody's pushing. And I think that where they're in debt, pretty soon the banker wants